Welcome to the Gatecast, presented by Alan and Mike.
Lucy, I'm home.
I am not Lucy.
Oh, you're right. We'll just upload a computer virus into the mothership.
I was going to do my living room like this.
Buffer, my recommendation is that anyone attempting to leave the mountain should be shot on sight.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Season 4 podcast wrap-up, always known as the podcast with no number. I'm Alan.
And I'm Mike.
And backed by popular demand, Daniel.
His demand.
Yes. It was a unanimous vote.
Clearly demanded. In fact, he's just tweeted us while he's on with us.
Well, at least somebody is.
At least I've noticed that the tab with Twitter on it will actually pop up a number if a tweet comes in. So if I keep an eye on it, I'll notice.
Right.
Especially since I'm not distracted by all the pretty pictures on the screen.
Yeah, that may help.
By which I mean Amanda, of course.
The whole email snafu last week was pretty good.
It was, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Fracking hilarious.
Yeah. And in 3 months, we might have some more email to read.
Ta-da!
Well, Adriana is desperately trying to catch up. She's on podcast 65 at the minute.
Oh, she's doing well.
Yeah.
That's the one who... Okay, never mind. You read the email last week. I get it. I know who she is now.
Uh-huh. So what I'm staring at is a... Do you want to open or close with the poll results, or do you want to say where each episode came in the poll as we sort of recap it briefly?
No, that is way too much work. Doing it episode by episode, come on. It'd be easier to just do the poll all in one go.
Which end of the podcast do you want to stick the poll on?
Well, it doesn't really matter. If we can talk about it. In fact, get it out of the way, I suppose.
Okay. So, hardworking Mike set up yet another poll. Can I reasonably guess which episode won, or is there even any point?
Well, let's say there was a firm favourite going into the poll, and if you put your money on the favourite, you would have won. So, drumroll. Which I'll probably try to find a nice... I think I'll find a clip.
Just type for 5 seconds, which would have the same effect.
It was the light, right? I'm thinking it was the light, yeah. That's my guess going in.
Yeah, that's not a shame. I should have done a secondary poll, which was your worst episode. Instead of getting the light getting a grand zero, I'm sure it got at least -1. I'd have voted for it, -1. The Season 4 favourite episode, according to the Gatecast survey...
Our survey said...
No way.
Window of Opportunity. It got 50% of the vote.
Are you prepared to reveal how many votes there actually were?
Yeah, why not? We got 32 votes.
Ooh, that's up on last season, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we got 24 last season.
That's a 33% increase. Our number of votes is up by a massive third.
I will admit, I did not vote for Window of Opportunity.
Didn't you?
I did not vote.
Why not, Alan?
I figured there were other people voting. I might skew the results. I'd sort of vote for Crossroads or something just to take the piss.
He was going for the American way where you just don't vote.
Yeah, you just don't vote, then you bitch about the results.
That's right.
I'm not bitching about the results.
It says something, though. If the starting host of the podcast doesn't even vote, admits it on air...
Well, how on air that is entirely dependent upon our esteemed editor.
Strategic editing, yeah.
We'll fix it in post.
Right then. Second place with 5 votes, so quite a big gap.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Tangent.
Really?
What?
Actually, I like that episode. I said so when we actually covered it. It's not Window of Opportunity, but I've always liked that episode.
You liked that episode, but I'll tell you why you liked that episode when we reach it.
Okay. Third place, 2010.
Whoa.
Get the impression that's the episode Daniel voted for.
No,
No, I'm going to say that sounded a distressed sound from Daniel's lips. So.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have been the one I voted for.
Fourth place, The Curse.
There we go.
Ah, there we go. It got 2 votes.
Two full votes.
Yeah, Daniel and his wife.
Wrapping up the poll with 1 vote each, Small Victories, Upgrades, Absolute Power, Prodigy, and Exodus. Everything else didn't get a vote.
Actually, I think I did vote for Prodigy, now that I think about it, because I thought the other one was cute.
Okay, fair enough then.
Come on, it's somebody at least as bright as Sam and even prettier. Where's the loss? you can color it even prettier a bit, or there's no way Amanda, not that I think Amanda Tapping's ever going to appear in this podcast, but even if she does, I seriously doubt. She might have a minion listen to all the podcasts, extract any inappropriate comments that I've made and ask me awkward questions about them.
Maybe.
That's when I'll have her, you know, I'll be on there with her, and then I'll just point out everything that you said about her.
Do you have an eidetic memory?
As many times as I've listened to this podcast.
Of course, you're current, aren't you, Daniel?
Current what?
Well, moving swiftly on.
Yeah, that kind of went right over my head.
As in, he's up to date. He's listened to all of...
Oh, yes.
Right.
I am up to date.
Let's see. Shall we do as we did with the previous wrap-up and just sort of have some brief thoughts from everyone in each episode, starting with Small Victories Part 2?
Yep, that'll work for me.
Oh, I did have one thing. You had asked about actors directing episodes, and you just did the one with Daniel, Double Jeopardy, where Daniel directed, Michael Shanks directed.
We'll come to it.
I know, but Chris Judge directed a couple episodes in the future.
We don't talk about the future.
I don't think Amanda or Richard ever directed any.
I believe Amanda directed some SGA. Could be wrong.
That's all I wanted to say. I'm done. See you later. Oh, wait.
I'm just fiddling with the battery here. One of you two guys want to open on Small Victories Part 2?
Go ahead, Daniel.
And now, on with the show.
Small Victories. The one where it opens up with Thor and Amanda trying to take out replicators, fumbling here.
Thor, buddy.
With Thor's and Jack's second attempt to go fishing, where the submarine, they find out that the one replicator survived and taking the submarine, taking over it. The two Russian guys talking about the replicator has to be the creature from the last episode was iconic. I love that. And then we see Thor needs help from somebody dumber race than them.
Yeah, you got to love the Asgard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and who do they send? The smartest person on Earth is still the dumbest, you know, dumber than Thor. So,
simply differently thinking, it's not dumb.
Right.
But on the fishing, one of my favorite little scenes is where Teok takes the mobile phone off. RDA takes the mobile phone off Teok, removes the battery, tosses it over his shoulder, and then hands him back the phone.
It's not this episode, though.
It is, isn't it?
No.
Jack and Teok are fishing?
That's the curse.
Yep. You said fishing.
There is some similarity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jack's attempt to go fishing.
Doesn't make it out the corridor again, does he, really?
He got beamed up the first time.
Yeah, well, that was my point. In Small Victories, he's explaining to Amanda, the fish was this big. And
that's right. It's almost a recreated scene from the first episode, the season finale of season 3, and they just pretty much recreated the same exact scene in season 4.
Are you sure you're not thinking of the previously on Stargate bit? Which would explain what the scene appeared to recreate.
We actually commented on it in our episode that we did.
Okay.
It's a first frame-by-frame copying of the scene. Comes rushing out of a lab to Jack, and Jack turns around and looks at her, and he looks up to see if anything's going to happen.
Instead of being beamed up, Thor walks through the gate with some very interesting CG effects.
Was it CG or was it puppetry?
It was half and half. Half was CG and half was puppetry.
Yeah, the good effects was puppets. The bad effects was the CGI.
We find out that all the other alien races, like the Nox and the Asgard, can open the gate without touching the gate, without touching anything. And yet we still have to go to a good old desktop to do it.
It's hardly a desktop. The thing takes up 3/4 of a large room. You know, all the blinking and flashing lights and flashing and blinking and blinking and flashing.
Yeah, but how will you know you've got a powerful computer if it doesn't blink? You know, the minimalist look that we have these days with just a pale white box with an on-off switch. It wasn't acceptable. It wasn't the done thing back then. It had to have blinking lights.
And it had to beep.
Yes.
Mine beeps. The machine I'm on now goes beep when I turn it on. I could take me back a couple of years. I could probably tell you what the beep codes mean.
Oh, lovely BIOS beep codes. You live for the time when it beep more than once and you go, no. And you get in the manual out, 3 beeps and, oh no, what's up?
Yeah, but what about the dial-up? Don't forget that one.
Oh, that went to dial-up. Sorry.
Oh, modem, is it?
And to think that some people still use...
Quite amazing the performance you could get out of a dial-up. I mean, you used to play Quake World on that, and okay, the latency was a bit iffy, but it was perfectly playable.
We're wandering off topic.
Are we doing a podcast about Stargate or about technology where you can get on the internet?
Episode 4.02, The Other Side, starring someone who might be familiar to anyone who's seen virtually any episode of DS9.
Odo.
Yeah, no, no, I actually wanted you to try and butcher his name.
René Auberginois.
Not bad, not bad at all. I'd almost pass you for Canadian. Do you think the moralistic sort of thing was a little heavy-handed in this?
Ultimately it was, but they got to that point with some nice, clever writing.
No, the exchange between Jack and Daniel, I thought was very well.
Oh, yes. Well, shut up, Daniel.
Yes.
Even the surprise is like, shut up, Daniel.
We had all the little looks towards Tilk, the little comments, you know, why isn't he drinking with us? And then ultimately, you know, it's probably best he doesn't come back.
Yes, it would be better if the Jafar did not return, was I believe the way René put it.
Yep.
It's admirable, but in all fairness, if the NID even got a sniff of that, they'd have been in like Flynn. Yeah. Okay, we have moral conundrum. Screw it. We have good weapons. Bye.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Ethics wouldn't have come into it.
They would have sent an all-male team that looked exactly alike. They would have pulled all their agents that wore the exact same clothes, and they would put them in there and got the weapons.
Yes. Wanted 6-foot blonde Marines.
Yep.
So what have we got to say on that one?
Oh, well, the heavy water. I thought that was good. It's not actually heavy. Trying to tell Jack it's not actually heavy. He's like, I know what heavy water is.
Well, Jack, I mean, did we get a link there with Jack from the sort of astronomy side of things?
That he'd in what way?
Be familiar with what deuterium was?
No, I don't think the two were actually linked.
The other thing I just thought was where he looks over at the fighter pilot and he's kind of just spaced out. And they're like, oh, don't worry, it won't happen to you the first time that you use it.
Yes. Long-term use can lead to slight brain damage.
Right. And Jack's like, oh, crap, I'm already halfway there.
Now, this was the first episode Peter DeLuise directed of the season. Surprisingly or not, he cast a young woman who eventually became his girlfriend.
Hmm. Yes. Are we getting nepotistic or are we sort of, I like you, I'm attracted to you. Like, I'll give you a role in the show.
She didn't become a series regular, so.
Well, she did act in another SG-1 episode, though, but we won't talk about that because that's future.
Good, Daniel. See it. Stay.
I'm learning.
Was that an actual dog or was that you impersonating one?
That was me.
That was quite impressive.
Thank you.
Where's your mobile phone when we need it, Alan? I miss it.
It's in my pocket, but it only does that when I get a text. And I don't get texts very often. I mostly get...
You don't want to hear what happens when my phone gets a text now. Just look up Conan, the Thor trailer that he butchered. My phone yells, I'm Thor! In a very high-pitched, somewhat homosexual voice.
Right, so you recorded that yourself then?
No, no, I got it off of an app, but let us not diverge or digress.
Yes, because let's face it, we never digress.
No,
never.
We wouldn't know how to do that.
Well, right. I'm assuming even Mike can't edit out all the digressions I throw in.
I could give it a go, but I probably haven't got enough time in the week to do it.
It's not even that. You'd end up with a 16-minute episode.
I can always put a promos in it and pat it out a bit.
It's 73% promo.
We're at over 20 minutes and we've only gone
throwing an escape pod flash, you know, just to pad it out a bit. Well, that was actually a promo, it was just a rather long one.
Yeah. Right.
Moving slowly on.
Yes.
Upgrades. Worth it if only for the very upfront Freya.
Lesser Angel. They made no bones about it. It was an attempt to draw in the same sort of demographic that Seven of Nine eventually did on Star Trek. Unfortunately, despite Vanessa Angel being an attractive woman, they did their best to make it not so. Because I don't reckon much to her outfits. And
what?
No, if you want a bit of cleavage, fine. But they weren't. I don't think they were very good costumes.
No.
I just don't think they were. Some of the System Lords' concubines, you know, they've been in far more creative costuming.
You weren't creative. I was going to go with alluring, but...
Whatever.
There's a hell of a difference between the two.
Now we know what demographic they were going for, Mike.
Yes, me. Frustrated Irish males. Frustrated males everywhere.
They were still in shock from the Children of the Gods original pilot, where they probably went a little too far.
No, they didn't go far enough.
There wasn't much more they could do with that scene.
My point being that they could have gone full-on Children of the Gods with, I suppose the actress probably wouldn't agree to it. No, we're Showtime, so we're going, this is a family show. They could edit it for syndication. They did for Children of the Gods. I got an awful shock the first time I saw that on DVD. I was like, I don't remember this. I'm sure I'd remember this. I wasn't that drunk. I don't think I can get that drunk.
Was it a shock or was it something else?
It was a pleasant surprise. We went to a pause and a rewind.
Oh, man. Put it on a continuous loop.
She's naked. Oh, she's fully clothed. She's naked again. Oh, she's fully clothed.
It's another Friends line right there. Remember Chandler?
Briefly, I was going to say Congress, but I thought in current context, that's really not Friends to you. Coming back to the episode at hand, this is the first time we see... Oh, no, it's not. Sorry. Reverse that. Never mind.
It started well, Alan.
Yes, but I realised that actually that was the Zaydark episode. We haven't that one yet.
Right. We need to put that... the record scratch. Put that
in. In this one, SG-1, well, apart from Teal'c, of course, and three members of SG-1 get the super-duper armbands, and they kind of go a bit to the heads. The power kind of corrupts them a little, especially when they go for a night out on the town for steaks and beer. Then they defy the general. We get a nice little adventure on a planet as they try to destroy Apophis's super starship that he's building. Unfortunately, as it turns out, as we learn later in the season, they didn't really do a very good job of that, or at least Apophis was building another one.
Sure, Apophis engaged in redundancy.
He probably did, yeah.
Well, we also have another episode, too, with that one.
Yeah, this directly leads on to another episode, which explores some of the events that happened in this episode. A fun episode. A little comment from Jack when Freya tells him, not Freya, Anise tells him, your strength is 5 times that of a normal human, and Jack dead so. No increase there, then.
Basketball trick with a little tube.
Oh, yeah. Great shot from across the room, that was, wasn't it?
We see a frustrated Janet, too.
This is the boxing, isn't it, when he actually decks Teal'c.
Yeah. And the rubber bar.
That's not something you really want to do if you have any sense of self-preservation.
Once the armbands fall off, you must be thinking, you're going to have to spar with Teal'c again. At some point, I'm going to have to.
Does he forgive and forget?
Ooh, I don't think so.
Season 5, no.
Forgiveness from Teal'c is something which brings us nicely into the next episode. Crossroads. Teal'c's, especially the last sort of 5 minutes, which seem to basically consist of Teal'c and... Mike?
Tanith.
Thank you. Glaring stonily at each other, sort of, I know, and you know, and I know you know, and you know I know, but we're not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, we're both going to pretend that none of this actually happened.
No. Yeah. Like, we're all happy Toker friends.
Yeah. Teal'c's like, I will make my jowls quiver at you. And that's pretty much as far as I'm going to go.
Which Teal'c, he does very well.
I mean, for Teal'c, that's the equivalent of doing a tap dance. You're like, this is it. This is expressive, Teal'c.
I said this on this episode. I say it again. I cannot stand Shauna.
Well, she died horribly. You should be happy.
The character or the fact that she exists at all.
I don't know if it's that actress or the way she played the part, but I've never seen her again in anything else, so I don't know if it's her, but it's just a really manipulative, I don't know, character. I don't know, it's just something about her just really...
She even if there's a Tanith is sweetness and light.
He's sweetness and light standing in a dark room.
It is, again, and it's something I think we commented on at the time, it is a beautifully shot episode. The way Tanith is lit, the way Teal'c is lit, the whole sort of just through, without even stating it broadly, just the way they're presented, you can sort of think there's something very dodgy about that guy. Plus, the actor playing Tanith just exuded sort of sliminess and kind of, I trust this guy. I trust him less than I trust politician.
Kinsey.
Yes, I'd sooner give my left kidney to Kinsey than trust Tanith.
Oh,
I watched Peter Wingfield in an episode of CSI Miami the other day, and he was a slimy toad in that as well.
Yeah, well, go what with was what his, you know.
What was his character in Highlander?
Ethos. He was predominantly a good guy. He was the oldest individual on the planet.
Now, see, I would go back and watch that just to see him play a good guy, because... All I've ever seen him is play a bad guy.
He was a good guy that chopped people's heads off, so, you know, they deserved it, but that's not the point.
Quite.
Fortunately, Sharnock dies in this episode, which kicks off the old mini-revenge arc with Teal'c and Tanith.
Indeed, foreshadows, and I say foreshadows, I mean that quite literally, because there are an awful lot of shadows in the episode, foreshadows their season finale.
Yes.
Which we'll come to. We didn't wait very long before we saw somewhat of a resolution to upgrades with Divide and Conquer. And the blurb, I have a comment. As the copy on these is horrendous. I've no idea who wrote it. But as bad copy goes, Divide and Conquer, the American one, When an SGC soldier under the influence of a Gould mind control device attempts to assassinate a High Council member, SG-1 must uncover other potential assassins, even amongst themselves, before the President arrives for a crucial summit meeting. As Blob goes, that's positively understated compared to the rest of the season. Everything else is overblown and ridiculously melodramatic. That's quiet, factual, and relatively accurate. The only thing it doesn't mention is the word Zaytac.
Well, there you go. That's why whoever wrote it got fired. We don't want fact.
That's actually good, Blob. It reads well. It's good copy. Yeah. Go work in advertising.
The IMDb is a little bit more descriptive, but it also mentions that O'Neill and Carter are implicated. And
that's the other thing with that blurb. The blurb, which we haven't read out and which we still won't read out, for episode 1, season 5, is full of spoilers. It's currently spoilerific. You haven't heard that because Mike hasn't released the episode for the end of season 4 yet, but trust me, it's awful. I've tried the British blurb and the American blurb, and they're both equally bad. You can't read either of them without knowing what's going on.
The pictures that they put on the box sets give away so much, too. It's irritating.
That depends. I've only actually got volume 5 to hand.
I guess maybe it's the menu pictures when you have your DVD up.
I think it's a given. They expect people who are buying the DVDs to have actually seen the series. You know, they're selling to fans of the show.
Not these days, though.
Maybe not these days.
There's a lot of people that don't even read the descriptions of the Supernatural episodes before I watch them, because I read the description of the previous one, I think, okay, I've seen that one. I start to read the next one, I'm like, haven't seen it. Okay, close little booklet, insert DVD, or rather insert Blu-ray, press play. Divine Conqueror, sorry, did you have a relevant comment about the episode? Or?
Yeah,
if you haven't, you must just show.
Oh dear. Is it this one or was it Crossroads where a niece comes up and says to Jack, a message from her dad, I'm supposed to shake Carter's hand and give Jack a kiss?
Yes, this one. Yeah.
I think Jack could have got off with a niece if he wanted to.
With Freya?
Well, with either of the both of them.
Well, a niece wouldn't have enjoyed it. She'd have been thinking about Daniel all the way through it. Which is a bit disturbing if you think about it.
Well, maybe season 6 Daniel, who's actually quite buff. But not season 4 Daniel. He's on the process of encountering buffness.
I'd say season 6 Daniel.
No,
I would say season 5 Daniel.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that we lose a character in this episode.
Half a character. I wouldn't say he's completely gone just yet.
Let's assume that when you die, you die.
Really? In sci-fi? No.
Well, put it this way. A character dies in the arms of the woman he loves, and he really shouldn't have loved her, because that's what happens.
Yeah, that's what happens to people, apart from Jack, that actually love Carter. They die.
Well, and that's why Anise never fell in love with Carter.
Now, that's an episode I'd like to see.
There's a DS9 one with Dax and a former partner. In a different
I know,
role.
They milked that one a bit, didn't they? Shot
that was a good 15-second on-screen kiss, which I believe was the first openly gay kiss in network sci-fi.
Was it?
I think so. Star Trek had been known for groundbreaking in terms of access to minorities and various other things. In science fiction, not necessarily in network television, but in network science fiction. I believe it was the first openly gay, sort of full-on, not just peck on the cheek holding hands. I mean, that was tongues and everything. Mike's going to have to edit that bit.
I think our listeners know what kissing is. I don't think they'd be offended by the description, unless it's the tone of the description.
Yes, because my tone is always completely innocent, above board, and suitable for Sunday school.
Yes.
So we say goodbye to Divide and Conquer and come to the daddy of the season, Window of Opportunity.
Indeed. And still my favourite line in this episode, or possibly the season, or maybe even the series. Jack's in the middle of my backswing.
In the middle of my backswing!
It is one of the funniest scenes of the entire series as well.
If only for Teok in the cloth cap and the plus fours.
Yes.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant.
I wonder, does they actually golf?
I'm sure they do.
Oh yeah. Yes.
You work for 6 months a year very intensely, and then you do nothing for the other 6 months. You got to take up something.
Yeah, his career isn't that bad.
But in mid-major series, I seriously doubt MGM would allow him to take on any other work for insurance purposes. If he's tied and he's under contract, SG-1, I doubt he'd be let take on other work.
Once you're out of contract, you're out of contract. You don't stop you from working for the rest of the year. In fact, that's one thing a lot of actors like about TV shows. they can do steady work for 6 months, then they go off and make a movie.
Usually a fairly awful movie.
Well, it depends what.
And most of the Friends cast.
Well, yeah, but these days you get a lot of pretty decent A-rated actors doing TV work, or at least
because it's a freaking meal ticket.
$1 million episode.
It's guaranteed money, and if they've been on it for a couple of years, they're up into executive producer, and they're getting residuals from syndication and DVD sales. You know, so you're laughing. Anyway. That was an aside discussion. Do we need to talk about Everyone Knows Window of Opportunity? Let's just skip on to Watergate.
I think the ghost reference was pretty good on Window of Opportunity, the pottery. It would have just been much better if Omen Asala had come up behind him and grabbed him or something.
Yeah, it would have been a good visual.
Also, how many archaeologists, Jack's argument with Daniel, and Daniel just keeps shooting them down. How many archaeologists carry guns? I do.
Yeah. That is actually my favourite quote from the episode, more so than the golf. This was the first episode written by Joseph Malozzi and Paul Mully. Who
Window of Opportunity or Watergate?
Window of Opportunity. We're still on this one, Alan.
Okay.
Patient. And
I said if only they'd have written more, they would have.
Yes. Yeah, so what did they do after this episode?
Oh,
no. They vanished.
They wrote Prodigy, he said, looking at the box that was in front of it.
Yes, they wrote about 30, 40 episodes, became executive producers. A major force in Stargate Universe.
Yes.
They followed the Peter DeLuise career path. Get a job on Stargate and take over. Brad Wright saying, where'd he come from? How come he owns 30% of the show?
How come his trailer's bigger than mine?
the reach or guilt effect. Anyone who's not a Pratchett fan won't have a bloody clue what I'm talking about. But Mike gets it, so that's all that really matters. Just as an aside, I was chatting with Adriana last night, and I was recommending first Pratchett books that she should read. This is relevant to Stargate. I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
And I said two books that she should read, because they're both standalones, are Pyramids and Small Gods. And she said, yeah, that's not a Stargate reference at all. I'm like, you know, that actually never crossed my mind. The two recommended Pratchett books for first-time readers just hooked totally, at least from a title, into the Stargate universe. But we've had our little Pratchett aside and...
Okay, right. That's another thing I'm going to have to cut out. By the time this gets heard, he could have met her, fallen out, and...
You don't want to talk about it anymore.
Dude, she's Arkansas. You think I can afford to flit across to the States?
I won't put anything past you. I'm sure there's a convention there somewhere.
Well, Arkansas is not that
big. There, that should be a nice marker for the end of the editable bit. Watergate. You know, they keep, I'm noticing just in the blurbs here, they keep mentioning the word beautiful. There seem to be a lot of very attractive women popping up as guest stars in the first half of season four.
Well, which one was that?
Stargate joins forces with a beautiful Russian scientist to investigate a rogue Stargate in Siberia. Watergate, a.k.a. either Ice Station Zebra or The Thing.
Yeah. All due respect to Marina, though, I don't particularly rate her as beautiful. I didn't rate her as beautiful when she was whipping her clothes off in the Highwayman movie, and certainly not in TNG.
Mm. Yeah.
No, Marina was sort of Lieutenant Cleavage in TNG.
Without the cleavage.
Yeah, we're never getting her on the podcast.
Because the problem with whipping clothes off in TNG was it tends to get you killed.
Hey, that's kind of way it is in Stargate, too.
True. You think that's why Tasha Yar ended up disappearing? Put on that slinky outfit?
No, she ended up disappearing because she did Playboy and Paramount went happy.
And yet, with Star Trek Enterprise, we get a Playboy model to act.
Oh, you see, she'd already done Playboy. That was during the show.
Well, they did have the jail scene. Come on, be fair. Mind you, Playboy has a lot more taste and class than that jail scene ever had.
Anyway, okay, so we've diverted slightly off topic with Incestris, but it's...
Whoa, we
get the...
Are you going to pull him up on that surname again?
Yeah, I know. I wanted to see if he'd say it.
You know, if he hasn't figured out how to pronounce a surname or just doesn't care by now.
Which do you think is more likely in my case?
Okay, going on.
I like the... Oh, God, I'm going blank on names. Mabel. Sort of slimy XNID head.
Mabel.
Yes, the Mayborn-sicle.
Holy
frozen. Would work
bad
a lot
guy.
Better if his surname only had one syllable.
How dare the writers give him
a lot better. It would look a lot better if he hadn't fake vomited.
Yeah. Not a good special effect, but we'll forgive him for that because, you know, most of the time they do the big stuff really well, including all the effects in the water, you know, with all the bubbles and whatnot.
No, they slowed it down. The bubbles, they also, when they filmed it, they slowed it down.
Yeah, I was just trying to remember what they used to actually make the bubbles. It was, it's in the episode anyway, that when we covered it, we talked about it. So
That's fair enough. Go back and listen to the episode. If you haven't listened to the episode, why you listen to the wrap up? Go back and listen to the entire season. And comments. Yes. Read your emails out sometime in September.
And Alan,
especially,
how many times have you listened to the episode?
Yes,
exactly. Quite now, aren't
you?
That
was my last episode.
Were you on that one?
I was on that one, but I was on the next one too, but it didn't get recorded.
Oh, the first ones.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't get recorded the second time, did it, either?
By the time we by the time we did record it, I think we were that jaded. It may not have come across as our best episode. It's like, God, here we go again.
Yeah, amazing how much she had to cut out of that episode. We just could hear people thumping their heads against the desk. No, not this again.
Do you recall, you got kind of snippy with me about me saying that we'd said stuff previously.
Yes, it just kind of take away the spontaneity of it, though there wasn't any spontaneity at all.
No, not at that point.
I'm just shocked you guys didn't use a gag line from Window of Opportunity. We've done this. Now we do this every week.
Right, then Watergate, we get the return of Harry Mayborn. Jack finds him in a freezer. Frozen popsicle, as Alan says. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he thaws him out, and which allows him to come back later in the season. Yay. Not a terrible episode, but...
Not a terrible character, Mayborn. I mean, I don't think you... Mayborn, I think, is... Okay, he's bad, but he's openly, sort of flagrantly bad. He's not subtle. He wears his evilness on... He's a little bad guy. Kinsey is a slimy... I think after 10 minutes of him with Kinsey, I'd want to shower.
Yeah, Mayborn has got a little bit of camp about him. Mm-hmm. He'll cheerfully be smiling while he's patting you on the back and getting the dagger out at the same time.
Yes, don't turn around too quickly, you get the knife in the chest.
Yeah. All right, is that it for Watergate?
Yeah.
Right, the first one.
Unas.
Yes.
Uno.
I win. No, Uno is just a version of Switch for people that can't tell the difference between cards and agree the rules.
Wow. Nice slam on all those Uno lovers out there.
Hey, I can alienate thousands of people in one sentence.
The return of Rothman.
Oh, yes.
The return, the return and demise of Rothman.
Yeah.
It's like, yay, Rothman. Oh, no.
Yes, you get the casting call. Jason, they want you back. Great. They're going to kill you. Oh.
Well, come on. It's got that great line. Hands up if you're Gould.
Yeah. Probably the last thing anybody expected.
I'm not sure if they told Jack, because RDA looked genuinely surprised. I don't know.
Really? He's really going to raise his hand? Really?
First ones was written and directed by Peter DeLuise.
Working man in Stargate until Joseph and thingy came along and took over.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I like the line when with Tilk and Jack, and Tilk saying, you know, trust me, O'Neill. What if I'm not O'Neill? Then I was not talking to you.
Yes.
Just totally deadpan again. Tilk, Christopher Judge, when he's in that mood, he delivers the humour beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's the ultimate straight man. That's why I think I asked you to insert I Am Not Lucy into the opening sequence for this podcast.
I Am Not Lucy. Well, we get a series regular again, Dion Johnstone, although he buries his character a lot.
Yeah, so the guy does pop up both as the Unus, a.k.a. Chaka, again, but also in other roles in the franchise. And we get Tilk demonstrating his magnificent weapon control. When they,
the casually over the shoulder midair shot. That's just show off.
Well, considering how inaccurate that weapon is over distance, you know, to actually hit something fast and small moving behind you.
Yep. Tilk gets smug about that for the next 3-4 episodes.
Oh, we have not mentioned the fuzzy caterpillar. We must mention the fuzzy caterpillar.
Go right ahead.
Yes, this whole beginning of the season, we haven't seen it gone yet. We see the fuzzy, beautiful little caterpillar on Teal'c's face that never goes away. Except in the next episode.
Yes, I almost thought we'd get away without mentioning it once.
Nope.
I'd actually suppressed it in memory. And it's hard for me to suppress stuff in memory.
Finally, you know, walked away, got a chrysalis, and then became a beautiful butterfly or moth, whichever one you want to call it. But...
Oh, to Moira Ferlin with more hair. Come on, dudes. I'm going to get a B5 tat, okay? I'm going to bring it up if it comes up.
Unfortunately, there's probably a lot of people out there who only know her from Lost.
That's truly sad.
Who?
Yeah, who? What's the actress's name?
Moira Ferlin.
I'm not even going to attempt to correct anybody else's own pronunciation. Yeah. I'm not touching that one.
She played Delenn in Babylon 5 and Russo in Lost, the French chick who had a baby.
Yeah, I know. Trust me. I know.
Has she popped in Fringe yet? Fringe seems to be collecting old genre actors and throwing them in for an episode or so. But We see the UNIS as more than simply a sort of mindless plot device. And I believe we revisit that later. Not in this season.
And we see Daniel's amazing linguistic skills at the end. Oh, he said that it's almost like Lassie. Bark, bark, woof, woof. Oh, Timmy's in the well. Really? Oh, okay. And he fell down there 4 hours ago? All right, yeah. That's pretty much the same thing.
Yes, Gerilyn Walk went today and I said, "What's up, Skippy?"
Get the reference.
Yes. She actually found it funny. Well, it was somebody I walk with, so at least she'd be and she's exactly 6 months older than me, so,
right.
So she knows she'll be of an age to get the reference. Okay, if you guys will kindly start talking about Scorched Earth, I need to temporarily wander away from the microphone.
Off you go then.
Oh wow, we're back to a 2-horse show. This is really... Ooh, that was quiet. Oh,
you tripped over.
Okay, Alan. Alan, you okay?
He's dead, Jim.
He was worse than dead.
I don't know. There's nothing subtle about Alan.
You listen to GWC?
For my crimes, I introduced Alan to GWC. I'd been listening to it for years, and I said, "Oh, I put that on the podcast." He listened to it, and next thing you know, he's off to America for the meeting.
He beat you.
Yeah.
I can't get into it. I listened to that one episode that he was in the background for, but I just really can't. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I started when they were covering Battlestar, so that were a weekly podcast, and then But like I say, there's millions of podcasts out there. If you can't find one you actually don't like, you're doing well.
Yeah, I listen. Actually, we just started watching BSG.
This is irrelevant vamping.
No, we were talking about you.
Yeah,
I can still hear you downstairs.
Oops. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, after a brief Alan-free hiatus, we shall discuss the reason for my return.
Oh, wow. Shocker.
It's almost 9 o'clock.
I didn't realize that the guy in Scorched Earth is actually a regular on BSG.
Oh,
first episode.
Is it Leon?
No, it's Gator.
Oh.
Alexander Giuliani.
But he looks so much younger in BSG. He must have got serious Botox.
No, I thought he looked younger in...
Remember, those people of that planet, they were different than Karens. They were made up. They had the...
Weird eyes.
Yeah, so...
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant the robot interactive thing.
No.
I was thinking...
Problem with faces again, isn't it, Alan?
Yes. I don't recognize half my own family. I've said this to Cass several times.
Too much cider.
Not enough cider. I've only had a mouthful.
It's uncanny. You listen to a podcast with Alan on and suddenly alcohol always crops up. I listened to him on the Sci-Fi Dig chat. And was it four bottles of cider in half an hour or something?
God. That were edited down.
Oh, that's even worse.
Sure.
That were actually an hour and a half.
Yeah, and that wasn't actually four bottles, was it? It was eight.
That were 500 mL, 16 oz for American friend cans. To get back to Scorched Earth, lovely effects. And I'm sure Mike could wax lyrical about the ship. Even though it seemed to move both very quickly and very slowly.
Well, yeah, it took its time getting there, but by the time it did get there, it hit like a sprinter the last couple of miles.
It was the interior was definitely something that made Tony Shalhoub very happy. Adrian Munt very happy.
Yeah, the very, 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 very white room.
Very stark, blank white room.
Means it's probably harder to get a properly stark, blank white room to show up correctly on film than it is to get something with complicated shadows and things. Because you can hide stuff. I mean, you got your stark white room, and then you get one grip with muddy boots, and the whole effect is destroyed. Darn it, wipe your feet.
Everybody wash your hands. And the music from the... what were they called? Cut that out.
Daniel, not this Daniel, or Daniel. The expression on Daniel's face when the guy brings the bomb on board and goes, "Oh, this looks interesting," and Daniel's like, "Maybe want to move
get it away."
Daniel trying not to panic, but you could say it nicely acted with kind of, barely suppressed terror in his voice because he didn't want to get blown up.
This could be very bad.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't get a bit more information on that race. The Gadmir.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Granted, the music was a bit rough on the ear. But being a...
Almost as bad as techno.
Yeah. Highly advanced intelligent species native to our galaxy. We didn't really come across too many of them.
The thing about the Gadmir music, it could have been something like, acid rock to them. And their classical channels may have been a little bit better.
Could have been, you know, it could have been the equivalent of our Radio 1, you know.
Just to give you an example of bad copy, final sentence from the copy on this one. Will SG-1 be able to reason with the marauding aliens, or will our plans for interplanetary diplomacy go up in flames? That's sort of hysterical copy that we normally get.
Yeah, it almost sounds as if they didn't actually watch the episode.
You've said that before.
I probably meant it then.
They probably skim the transcript and go, oh, here, 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 and here. That's points.
Yeah. A good thing about this episode, again, we see the conflict between Jack and Daniel, you know, that first turned up in the other side. Even though Daniel actually does his best to comply with Jack, can't help himself but try to find another solution, even if it means going up to a ship where a bomb's going to go off.
Please tell me you're not on that ship.
I'm not on that ship.
I was 10 seconds ago.
Luckily, I mean, the whole episode is paced well, except for the final few minutes where everything seems to happen at once. Yes, you know, you get resolution.
Run long. Edit.
Yes.
5 minutes before the end, that's the climax, and then it has to run off from there. And we actually do get a ticking clock from the bomb.
But it's not necessarily relevant.
Yeah, and it was a small bomb at that. I was expecting a huge explosion, and then when he finally fired it up into the atmosphere, it just went pop. Yeah, I think, is that it?
Well, bear in mind, it might have gone suborbital by the time it actually blew up.
Yeah, that's what you said. I didn't agree with you then either.
Meow.
It was just the fact that they'd spent so much money on the graphics for the spaceship and everything, they just couldn't afford a big explosion. It was as simple as that.
Put a squib up there.
Yeah. In fact, it'd been better not to show it and just kind of show some light effects on the faces or on the village overhead.
Maybe sort of from inside, you hear a loud boom and the ship shakes a bit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. See, you make a producer of you yet.
Moving on to 4.10, Beneath the Surface, we encounter a sci-fi trope.
Everybody's forgotten everybody else.
Not the best episode of the season.
For fans of sort of Spartacus Blood and Sand, I suppose.
There was plenty of beefcake walking around the set. I'll give him that.
Yeah, where's Jason Momoa when you need him? I've listened to the first episode and a half of Tyrion's Landing. The two girls wax lyrical about Jason's chest. And no, we're not objectifying him. We're simply admiring him.
I'm sorry, yes, did you say that's... they wax lyrical?
Coat, door. But yes, Teok with a mysterious bandage around his belly.
Yeah, convenient that.
I did like the names, how they rename them. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Jonas and Thea.
Tor,
yeah.
Yeah. Again, I mean, I said this constantly throughout this season. The cinematography was excellent. They're in an actual location. It's lit for effect. And while they actually did use real flames and real exploding rocks, which was a mistake, as it turned out to be, it did produce a very good atmosphere for the episode. The episode, though, as you say, has been done so many times in other shows, you didn't really get any suspense or excitement from it.
I'm not sure how many times it's been done in other shows when this was broadcast.
True.
You know, TOS, I don't know if TNG did it.
Well, Voyager did.
We do get the introduction.
Voyager did, but surely Voyager was after this.
Yeah, it was.
Because I remember the Voyager one. That were a two-parter.
We get the introduction of Major Griff.
Of who?
Major Griff.
Oh, yeah, Major Griff, yeah, yeah. Russell Ferrier. And he pops up 3 or 4 times later in the season.
Well, he's going to get killed off at some point.
Not this season, he don't.
No, I was just going to say, he has the same attitude as Jack, kind of a carefree, not really about the whole regulation and the piousness of the military.
I suppose when you've done black ops for this country you're supposed to be pious about for about 10 years, you tend to take any order you're given with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, it does ask for a bit of sidestepping of orders, you know, interpreting the orders. We do get one hell of a quote, though, in this episode. There's Jack with Sam, you know, at this point, they're just starting to have little hints of the memories coming back. And Jack's sitting there thinking, there was a man, he's bald and wears a short-sleeved shirt. I think his name is Homer.
Yes.
Yeah. The Simpsons reference has been referenced in the show before, and of course, you're thinking, Hammond, he's short-sleeved, he's fat, he's bald.
It took me about 5 times watching that to figure out, oh, wait a minute, this is the Simpsons reference.
Yeah, I love it, that one.
Well, there's not much point in spending a lot of time in this episode since we're not quite halfway through and we are coming up to an hour. An
hour and 10 minutes, actually.
Yeah, but we had pre-podcast.
We only talk to the listeners.
And we have a guest star with actually one of my favorite guest stars of this season in Point of No Return.
Yeah, Willie Dawson.
I always like to see Willie in different things.
Go.
Not outfits, shows.
I was just thinking, that's something like GWC. That's what she said. Or is that too much of an English colloquialism?
No, I know the GWC crew use it a lot. So it's not. It's definitely not an English colloquialism.
That's what she said.
Yeah, that got old pretty quick, didn't it?
Didn't. Yeah, it did.
Okay, point of no return. The SGC get a suspicious phone call from a civilian claiming to know all sorts of bits and bobs about the Stargate program.
I still have issues with how he got through as a Jack.
Well, not just the Stargate program, but every conspiracy.
See, he knows everything. Of course, they send Jack. Why not? You know, a bit pointless if they send somebody from the NID. You'd never have seen Martin Lloyd again if they turned someone from them and locked up, and that would be the end of it.
Locked up? He'd been chopped up for bloody spare parts.
That's assuming they'd figured out he wasn't human.
But what was it he calls Teok? Phil?
No.
Murray.
Murray. I just feel Teok is more of a Phil.
The bed, the vibrating bed was good.
Oh, yeah. Teok really enjoyed that.
Teok and the... What is that? Is that a duck? Did you paint that yourself? Daniel's a little quipped about infrared scan. Willie and his... if you put the toothpick behind the door, how'd you get out of the house? The window. Like, idiot. Of course. Very well done, I thought.
It was a funny episode. And thankfully, we do get to see Martin again.
He's an endearing character. He's sort of a kind of a... I think we're definitely, stereotypically socially inept geeks were supposed to identify with Martin.
Yeah,
I'm not saying all geeks are socially inept. A significant percentage of the demographic.
You got to remember that this episode was written because of all of the chatting online about it. So I think they did write him according to us, the viewers.
Mm-hmm.
And as Jack says, everything's about magnets.
I mean, Jack just has so much fun winding Martin up.
He does, doesn't he? Of course, we get the great scene where, oh my God, it's a bomb. Run for your lives. And they all jump out the building onto concrete, and they're still there.
Well, the other one is when Martin's inside the diner, and he's like, they're watching me. And Jack's like, that's just paranoid. And then you see all the video cameras and Teal from the kitchen.
Yes. Yes. It's a green van. This van is green.
It actually had them on it, didn't it?
Yeah. No, he's like, what would you call that? A kind of a grayish green? No, you don't have a wire on you at all.
That was a satisfying episode. When they go all out to make a fun episode, they tend to get it right.
Indeed, although they did blow up the... Oh, there's a name for that class of ship, isn't there? It's not quite a cargo. It doesn't... It's a smaller version. It doesn't actually have rings on it, as in... ring transportery thing. It's kind of halfway between a glider and a cargo transport.
You're talking about the Alkesh, but the Alkesh is bigger. But that's not the ship that blew up.
No, that's the Martin ship. That's not a Gaul ship. That's their own ship, an escape pod.
I thought the sound effects when it blew up was pretty good. And then that was a pretty good sound effect. Put in there.
And sudden crater. Nice little shockwave, and then the ground kind of slumps.
And cue crater.
Every seismological research station across America, you know, probably registered that.
Holy crap, what was that?
Yeah. How do we cover that up? The whole world's looking at this area of America now.
The Air Force says something about an experimental weapons test.
No, unfortunately, exercise.
Yeah. Yes, something crashed which caused such a bang it was recorded in Siberia, 12,000 miles away. But move on, nothing to see here.
Okay, tangent then.
Smooth, Alan, smooth.
Well, you said move on. I was moving on.
Well, go on then, Alan.
What? Oh, you want me to say something about it?
Yeah, why not? Go on.
No, we'll just name the episode and then... Okay, we did tangent.
Yes.
And then we did the curse, and it...
I'm actually... No, I there's some nice moments between Jack and Teok in this, especially... Jack throwing the pen at Teok.
Teok.
Yes. We want you to eject, sir. What? I wonder if Jack got wasted in order to get the appropriate sort of, you know, modus operandi.
I can say what the actors didn't know is that cockpit was actually airtight and they were sucking out the air.
Asphyxiation.
Well, technically rapture of the deep, you know, nitrogen bubbles and that.
Carter, and then he's like, Carter, is that you? Like, who have you been talking to? Oh.
I think Drunk Jack is similar to Old Jack from season 3.
Jacob's little tirade when he catches Daniel and Sam on the planet is priceless.
What's this about?
Jack and Teal, blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay, let's go.
A quick about face. I mean, he's the only Tok'ra that actually has any sympathy for Earth at all, and that's only because of Jacob. I think it underlines what bastards a Tok'ra are, really.
I've been fighting an implacable and powerful enemy for thousands of years. You get a little selfish and paranoid, because the universe really is out to kill you. I'm arguing in favor of Tok'ra motivations, while I'm still capable of coherent speech.
Traitor.
You can understand, though, why we kept this development project secret from him.
Oh, yeah, because Jacob is righteously annoyed. He's like, what the hell are you messing with here? This isn't something you can just glue together and go.
Slap
you
know, a US
it's not a kit.
Yeah. What happens if we press this button? Don't press the button. You don't want to find out. We'll press it anyway. What's the worst that could happen? Pop, the universe ended.
I prefer the Douglas Adams approach. You know, it's like, I pressed this button. What happened? A small sign lit up which said, please do not press this button again.
And then the curiosity got the better of them.
Yeah, well, it's like, it's human.
Don't look there. Where?
Well, Jack especially. You know, Jack would be the pillar of salt so fast, to make a biblical reference. Like, don't look back. Well, boom. Oh, crap.
Again, though, another episode that, for what really was kind of a little bottle episode, if you think about it. But the visuals were fantastic, and they actually said at the time, it actually cost them a hell of a lot more money because they had to do all the CGI glass.
Yeah,
because real glass reflects a camera.
Mm-hmm. Did this not occur to them?
Obviously not.
I mean, this is basic physics here.
Well, I suppose that, you know, this may have been the first time they did this level of shooting on one of the models of the spaceships they had. You know, before, they used to have that, the cloud, kind of the cloud wallpaper, they used to rotate to make it look like the ship was actually flying. Well, they didn't have any of that this time, so it would just matte black. Yeah.
Did they simulate space with the classic black velvet with white light behind it, a lot of holes poked in it by a very bored AD?
For some scenes, they did, which is why the stars move in a rather haphazard way. Yes.
That's why they couldn't roll that paper either.
No, not very well.
Stars are going by.
I'm now officially lubricated, by the way.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, man. Oh, I went the other way with that. Okay.
A quote from Tangent that has to be said. Hmm? Beam them out. What am I, Scotty? Classic. Classic stuff.
Attaboy, Jacob.
We follow Tangent with another Jacob episode.
Do we?
Which is logical. Yeah, Serpent's Venom.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Transcript order, it's Serpent's Venom. On the broadcast order, it was The Curse, wasn't it?
There we go, yes.
Curse. One of my favourites. Of course, I voted for it.
And of course, the box art and probably many a blurb points out that Anna Louise Plowman, who plays Sarah Gardner, is the bad guy.
Or a bad girl.
Which is a shame because halfway through the episode, you're thinking it's Dr. Stephen Reiner, played by Ben Bass.
Which is, of course, what you're supposed to think.
Yes. So you get the twist at the end.
DVD menu.
Oh, yeah. Anything like that. I mean, they go to all that trouble to set all that up just so they can have a walking out through a halo of light in a shimmery outfit and gaudy light.
Doesn't she look good?
She does, yes.
Like I said, a lot of very attractive women in the scenes.
So much so, you almost ignore Janet's cleavage. Almost, but not quite.
Poor Terrell. Is it Terrell? How the hell do you pronounce that first name?
Terrell.
Yeah.
Is that someone decided Cheryl's too boring? I'm going to make someone spell their name for their entire adult life.
Who knows?
T-E-R-Y-L.
This is the episode where Jack and Tilt go fishing.
Yes.
You could sort of cut out and drop in the comment I made about the mobile phone.
That would be so much fun.
You could.
It's probably better leaving at the start and my complete screw-up.
I say, there's lots of things I could do to make this sound better. I'm more professional. No, but nobody would believe it if it turned out.
Cut out the American. Oh.
Don't think he's going to do that anyway.
This program has been interrupted while Daniel has been edited out.
You will hear lots of holes.
What sound does a hole make? That would be an excellent opportunity, Mike, to drop in a fart noise.
No, that's not going to happen. I have some standards. Not many, but I have some.
Damn it.
Although I watched Simpsons the other day with the Toot and Poot machine.
Not seeing that one. If I can point out to the listeners, I'm the only one that's actually drinking here.
I do feel like McKay here, though, in season finale of SGA, when it's like, leadership. Okay, so keep going back to Curse. Going back to the episode name.
We get the scene at the cabin when Daniel is talking to Teal'c. He says, have you caught anything? We have caught nothing. We are fishing.
Well, it really summarizes fishing. I mean, the whole point of fishing isn't to actually catch anything.
You know, he's like, you need my help? And then, no, I'm good. And he's like, are you sure?
Yes. Teal'c wants out.
This is, by Teal'c standards, a desperate cry for help.
Well, you think about it. This is 4 years he's been on Earth, and he still hasn't got his own place. He's probably still tied to always being escorted anywhere.
Yeah.
Except when he escapes.
Because I'm sure Teal'c getting his own place will work out so well.
I'm sure.
The other line I love was Jax, as they're walking out of the base, you know, Asgard, they're going to have to beam me up. If it's a Toker, forget it!
And what happens? Yeah. He goes up to the cabin and he misses all the fun.
For a given value of fun.
Yeah.
So Pretty Girl becomes Gould. And more backstory for Daniel, which is, Mike has pointed out repeatedly in the podcast, Daniel's been the only person that you can explore any series about the backstory for.
Yeah.
Well, we see that Steven is very sneaky and very snake-like. Speaking of snake-like, come on, segue. The Serpent Swim.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry.
So he's trying to be clever. He's trying to be clever.
It's confusing. He's American. He's not supposed to be clever.
Ooh. We don't do clever.
Be careful, that might just cause a chain reaction now.
Yeah.
Like it did last year in 2010. No, go ahead.
I can enjoy it as we sit here on what's potentially the fourth from last day of the universe. But...
Serpent's Venom.
Nice Jacob episode. I'm sure Daniel has a lot to say about
Jacob?
The Toker have a plan for taking care of Apophis and Hurura. Yes.
Yeah.
It's Alan's Certus and it's Mike's Herrer. Well, just the whole heads up display piloting, I thought was like, really? We really didn't need that heads up display over his eye. I thought the whole keeping the mine inside the ship without touching was pretty good.
Yeah, that was clever. Until, of course, Jack took the controls and totally missed the mine, headed straight for him. Looking over his shoulder.
Not only that, almost squashed Daniel.
Yeah. He's telling, you know, he's waving at them, move out of the way.
Yeah. That's not how you pilot, Jack.
You know, this isn't you don't have a Wii remote in your hand. That's not how you pilot.
Both hands on the 10 and 2 position of the glowing orange ball.
Yeah, a strange interface console, that is.
Yeah, nothing sexual about gently stroking the glowing orange ball. It's a MILF. Yes.
Nice shiny ball. Nice shiny. It's a globe, not a ball. Sorry, globe. You're not taking this seriously. It's a globe.
You know, just stroke it gently and make sure it doesn't overreact.
Yes. We'll leave that, I think. This is actually rather a big episode. You have tons of CGI. You get Apophis and, let's see, who else? Hurura. Jacob, of course. Oh, yeah. Teal'c gets himself captured, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets a little bit hurt.
A little bit. You know, what happens when you get a red hot poker stuck up your patch?
And we see Ragnar.
Yeah.
Who got a red hot poker in the head. Something continuity-wise I did not understand about this episode was he said when I was a child that he did this. And how old is Ragnar? Because Teal'c didn't lead the rebellion except for like 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, Teal'c's lad? Was it Primtak?
Primtak.
He was about 13 or 14, wasn't it? So it must be when puberty's kicked in, obviously.
Well, it's like, you know, the way he puts it, you would think he was yelling, no, daddy, no, you know, don't burn my head off.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas age-wise, it would have been, you know, don't take me away from my wife and kids and burn this thing off my head.
Yeah, his father must have been, you know, executed maybe 2-3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, it's not something I've ever really worried about.
Don't worry about it.
Well, not worry about it. I mean, the lad comes good at the end.
Yep, he's actually a good character.
Yeah. Where's Alan? Has Alan gone walkabout again?
No, I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Oh, right. You had gone walkabout again.
I was very quiet about it.
You guys are boring.
Yeah, well, normally you're tripping over everything. Yeah. You've got your microphone plugged in and everything, and you're dragging it across the room.
I snuck off very quietly. You didn't even notice until I hadn't said anything for a while.
Well, I heard a humming, and I thought, what the hell's that? And then I realised Alan wasn't talking.
You hear the toilet flush, you hear.
Mike Leeds not that long.
Yeah, the door closed, you hear an engine, you drive off, 5 minutes later he comes back with a Chinese takeout or something. Keep talking, lads. Keep talking.
And here the whole time.
See, it all goes perfectly smoothly.
Actually, wrap up this little episode when Apophis' fleet and Hero's fleet meet, and Apophis, once again in his super starship, gets away.
He's able to cloak a whole fleet of ships, which he didn't realize before.
Yeah, doesn't he kick Hero's arse?
Pretty much so.
That was it. Apophis' ships.
They sacrificed themselves to block the mines, yeah.
Yes.
Allowing Apophis to escape. But Aurora got himself totally slaughtered. Because that super starship not only has good shields, cloaking technology, it's got the biggest gun on it.
Yeah, because in war, it's all about who's got the biggest gun. Sorry, I didn't quite pick up what Daniel said that time.
He who wins in war has the biggest gun. I said, well, maybe that's other things too.
Right. So we are going to talk about chain reaction.
We shall. Another Tom McBeath episode.
A Kinsey episode.
Yeah, so two bad guys for the price of one. But one bad guy is not quite so much of a bad guy. Any bad guy that can start dancing away to kettle drum music isn't that bad.
Well, that's not so much start as finish. It's. I wonder, wasn't that the end of one of... Was that the end of Silence of the Lambs? He contacts you one from a tropical island.
No, he just talked to her on the phone.
Yeah, but wasn't he in sort of some happy, sunny place?
I remember it rather dark.
Okay, fair enough.
I may be wrong.
It could just be completely in my head. But that sort of skips to the end of the episode where Mayborn is quite happy and he's bopping away with the native lady.
Making Jack want to have Hammond buy back his soul. You see Jack's dog, RDA's actual dog.
Yes, we did mention that when we were recording it. Well, okay, I'll be honest with you. Mike mentioned it because Mike does actual research.
Oh, no, just listen to the commentary.
That still counts as actual research. I don't even watch the friggin' episode.
Forget the classic afternoon mom. I'm Mr. Starsky and this is Hutch.
Oh, they're actors.
Brilliant, that was. Kinsey obviously didn't marry for intelligence.
I'm just voting on the side that she actually knew and she called the NID.
You think so?
I do. I think it was all a ploy.
Interesting.
I don't know if Kinsey were prepared to marry someone that was even more evil and manipulative than he was.
It's a thought, though, you know.
I didn't mention Nixon on Watergate, bummer.
Yeah, I wonder why you didn't mention Kinsey in Watergate, actually. Kinsey, our very own Nixon.
Nixon, of course, appeared in Doctor Who recently.
Yes, but according to the Americans, it was an awful Nixon.
Seriously, it's a science fiction program about a guy who travels through time in a blue box.
They have a problem with the actor who plays Nixon.
Oh, right. What about Nixon in Futurama? Any problems with that?
Bye-bye.
Well, the Nixon in Futurama is
short.
A caricature.
Oh, that's all right.
No, that's an actual likeness. I'm kidding.
Yes, of course.
Yep, deadpan.
That's all about conspiracy theory and Mayborn, and we get to see Kinsey beautifully chew scenery for about 20 minutes. And we get to see Jack pulling over on Kinsey. Kinsey is not going to forget that.
Oh, no.
I was not waving, pointing. The gun. Come into my house waving a gun. Not waving, pointing.
Unfortunately, Hammond has a few days off and the base nearly gets blown up.
Yes.
General Bauer.
Yeah, you've got to learn. Always listen to Sam. If she thinks something's a bad idea, it's probably a bad idea. Especially when it comes to Naquadah and nuclear weapons.
Especially when he knew full fracking well that they were relying on the fact that the planet had Naquadah on it. Old Naquadah mines, they were using this as a test to see if they could blow a freaking planet up.
Yeah. But it shows you how deep the NID are when they can actually maneuver somebody that they can control into a position at the SGC.
I said it at the time. I think he was just a patsy. I don't think he was, it wasn't obvious NID control. They had someone who thought the way they wanted, but I don't think he was aware he was being manipulated.
In that case, then, he should never become a general in the first place. I think he was a lot more intelligent than that, and he must have realised what he was doing didn't make any sense. But what went on during the test of the atomic bomb? What did some of the military think then? I mean, we know when the scientists were saying one thing and the military was saying another. Who knows?
Project Blue Sky.
Well, Dr. Manhattan tried to stop it, but oh, wait, that wasn't actually real.
Just because I mentioned blue, you went from blue to Dr. Manhattan?
No, actually, I went to Manhattan before you said blue.
Oh, I believe you. Billions.
Thank you. I did not have sex with that woman. Oh, wait.
I think your kids would tell a lie to that.
Proof that nerds have... Oh, wait. Skip that out, please.
Mike's editing depends upon mood and how long the episode is and how much time he can be able to put into it, I think.
Let's say we're at an hour and 41 minutes.
Yeah, and it's always nice if there's a little bit I can put on the Facebook page. You know, if there's something you don't want to include in, it's probably best, you know, not bother telling me so I might miss it. You know, then put that in. Okay, but I'll keep it.
I have to be somewhere at 4:30. Shall we keep?
Yes, we shall keep going.
Come on then, keep the pace up then. That's...
2010, which, did we refer to it as last year?
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I actually quite like this episode, if only because it foreshadows something that happens later, but it's a kind of a Teok with hair, wasn't it? Different robe, though. You get the impression the Jafar are free.
Yeah,
many left of them. Yeah.
Okay, the Jafar are an endangered species. I wonder if they killed Ryak.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Well, I like the Mulum is a character you'd love to hate.
Oh, yes. he had a little bit of creepiness about him, and... You know, like, he's a sort that you don't want to leave him alone in your room. He's that sort, yes.
This is her hobby? Carter's husband?
No.
It really does help if you actually watch the episode, Alan.
I do watch the episode, but names don't stay in my head.
Pale white guy in a...
Yeah.
They're so condescending, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So this episode was written by Brad Wright, and obviously time travel, which is his speciality. We get a little shot of Kinsey as President of the United States, so that little seed that Jack... planted, actually bore fruit. So that must be killing Jack, which is obviously one of the reasons why I quit. I'm going fishing.
Mm-hmm. And as Stephen said, the most pressing thing I need is whether or not to get a dog.
True enough.
Tour guide. And we're walking.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant, she was.
She was irritatingly perky. I've met tour guides like that. I've left the tour. If I go on tours, I'm usually hungover, and perkiness is irritating.
Even Gary Jones gets a few more lines than usual as he becomes kind of a curator for the SGC Museum. Yeah, he even gets to boss around SG-1 as well.
Jack ad-libbed his line, his name, Walter. He was not originally supposed to be called Walter. Jack pulled that straight out of thin air.
In this episode or in a previous one?
No, this one, he was like, Walter.
That probably explains why he was wearing Davis's nameplate in the episode a bit later, because he still wasn't sure what his name was. What's my character's name? Oh, sure, well, I'll just put that on.
Well, you know...
Wardrobe are shy on uniforms, just wear this.
You know how he got Airman? Because Hammond always called him Airman, and one time he said it like... He said Airman like Harriman, and that's how he got his last name. Okay. So he became Walter Harriman because Jack ad-libbed his line and Donis Davis screwed his last name up.
Strange foreshadowing of what actually happened to Donis Davis, given the fact that Donis Davis's character is dead in the episode 2010.
By a heart attack.
It was oddly prophetic. I wonder if Brad Wright felt guilty about that when Davis actually had a heart attack.
Davis probably went, wait a minute, Donis Davis worked for me?
Next on, Absolute Power.
If this you immediately is, know the candlelight is fire.
Yes. Shifu, the smart little bastard.
Yes. We come back to Mike's slight issues with precocious kid characters.
I didn't really mind him this time because I like the Zen Buddhist side of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
You didn't think he came across as a smug little git?
Oh, yes. It was definitely a smug little git, but he did have a reason to be. He was quite intelligent.
Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Did Homer teach you that? No, television.
Yeah, we corrupted him.
Good. Glad we're good for something. We can corrupt innocence.
It was an interesting idea that, you know, the whole knowledge of the Guo actually would corrupt anybody that had access to it, even someone with pure motivations. If Shifu himself couldn't handle it, then Daniel certainly couldn't, as he proved. Within a few years, he turned into a total megalomaniac and tried to take over the whole planet.
Did they actually pronounce it that way? Because I was always thought it was Sifu.
No, it is Shifu.
Not in 5 years of martial arts for me, but so be it.
The the target has been eliminated.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he just not turned only to has the target. Not only has the target been eliminated, but you know, sort of several hundred square miles around the target seem to have gone as well.
Like yeah. Cutting your enemy's heart out with a scalpel. No, not really.
No.
More of a hammer.
Yeah.
Sledgehammer. Wall.
His kidneys and his lungs have gone as well.
But, you know, you were almost expecting, after the shield came up on that, you're almost expecting Daniel's eyes to glow.
Mm-hmm.
It's all like we were short of.
It showed Daniel literally became everything a Gould was without actually being a Gould.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even have the influence of the sarcophagus to kind of twist his psyche around.
Let's not go there. That episode has been recorded and recapped. Let's not mention it again.
But we need to.
How do I cut someone out mid-conference call?
You have been bumped by Alan.
Your Skype contact has been blocked.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Didn't you say you had to be somewhere?
Yes, I did. The light.
The light. Worst episode of the season. Next.
SG1 gets through. So this does impact on your adolescent slash child irritating character.
Well, he wasn't a child. He was a young man. Only a child.
Legally, he was a child.
I would say he was probably over 18. 17, 18, right, I mean.
Excellent actor. He played the role well. Mm-hmm. Thought, again, the set design, production, absolutely top-notch.
Pretty.
It did, but unfortunately, it was a simple standalone. It was a filler. As such, it didn't have the depth of any of the ARC episodes, and it suffered for it. It's okay, but it's not one I'd ever choose to watch again.
Given that we're approaching 2 hours, we can wrap with that. Prodigy. I'm sure Daniel didn't have anything to say about it, so moving on.
Well, Prodigy, the thing about Prodigy, which is cool, is I have to mention just that certain character in season 5.
No,
this is not spoilery at all. The actor's name is Jennifer Haley. And this character in Prodigy is Jennifer Haley. And they actually got the other actress to do Prodigy, not this girl. And then when they something happened with her and they couldn't do it, so they named her character on here after the actress that was supposed to do it.
Okay.
That's just kind of an interesting little thing, considering it's just a moon, it's not a planet.
Yeah, which is why we get the M designation, as Mike pointed out, when we were recording, rather than a P designation.
Which you would think, sorry, bad joke.
Alan likes Elizabeth Rosen, don't you, Alan?
Yes, I did. Although she doesn't seem to have done anything else. Maybe she's gone into the legitimate adult theatre industry.
Wow. And that way you would like her even more.
I'd say we do get another recurring character introduced, played by Bill Dowd, Dr. Lee, to Bill Lee.
Bill Lee.
We get a good red shirt moment.
We get a really, really stupid scientist. These people are, you know, trained. They have advanced degrees and probably PhDs. How can they be so thick?
It's the way they're written.
God. I'm not that. I'm just drawn that way.
Yeah.
I knew you were going there. I could tell you. I went there as soon as he said it's the way they're written, but you didn't have to vocalize it, Daniel.
Let's not forget the guest appearance by General Michael Ryan, at the time a member of the Joint Chiefs.
The General Ryan.
Did you think Jack ad-libbed that?
No.
Probably. Really? You don't think so? Most of that? I would have been pretty nervous myself if I'd have been.
Well, Jack's not actually in the military, so, I mean, in fairness, it wasn't really a great deal General Ryan could do to him.
Well, General Ryan's nervous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You could really tell, you know, he's reading the cue card beyond the cameraman's shoulder.
Sure got
that slightly glazed look.
That one, eh, George?
Yeah. He finishes that set and goes,
interject briefly. Sprouse and GWC has actually tweeted us during a recording. Just enjoying the cast, keep it up. But I think that's a first for us. Daniel tweeting while he's on the cast with us doesn't really count. Sorry, Daniel.
Hey, I did it one time before.
Yeah, but we missed that. I've been keeping it. I saw one pop up. I was like, aha. So, Spatterson, to be honest with you, we read that almost within seconds of it coming in.
Have you replied to her to let her know that we've spotted it? Otherwise, it'll be a month before she hears it.
Where's the reply button? There.
One of these days, I'll be able to know what you're typing by the sign of the keys that you're hitting.
I'm almost at that now for other people.
Right. Okay. Yep, that was Prodigy. One little line I like. The scientist, you know, he's walking, you know, the arrogant little swine, the scientist who gets his, pretty much his comeuppance eventually. What's his name? Duncan Hamilton. He's taking a little expedition out, talking about Jack. He's too busy polishing his M16. And then we see in the background, Jack, it's a P90.
Yeah.
And there he is actually polishing his gun.
why he's actually polishing a plastic gun is kind of a moot point, but...
Well, you still got to get that nice matte finish on it. You know, take care of your weapon and your weapon will take care of you.
Well, technically take care of your weapon and your weapon will take care of other people.
It wasn't a bad episode. It had lots of funny moments. Jack, tilt shooting Jack, that was absolutely priceless.
Of course,
the expression of sheer youthful arrogance on Elizabeth's face.
Oh, yeah. She knows everything.
And at that age, you really, especially with that bright, you really do think you know everything. Not that I'm speaking for.
What were you thinking when you hit that upperclassman? Aim high.
It's rather a pity that they didn't use her more.
Mm-hmm.
She could have been a very good recurring character.
She may have elected not to continue in acting.
Well, like I say, don't know the reason why. It's just a shame that she wasn't used more.
4'9" fighting machine.
The other point with these Fireflies is the P90 is basically useless.
Anything's basically useless except electricity.
Some nice back and forth between Haley and Carter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both think they're right. They're both brilliant. But Haley actually goes, well, you're being stupid and you're going to kill him, kind of thing.
And the phaser quote was good. Let's phaser things.
Yeah.
Well, we did. I mean, you got phaser, and yet that's why I think I mentioned the red shirt thing, because she mentioned phaser. At least that's my excuse.
Okay, my favorite. Sorry, I can't believe I just said my most hated episode of the season.
Oh, Entity.
Blech. I've watched it twice.
A bit of a rehash to some extent of the Jack episode with the probe in season 2.
Message in a bottle.
Yeah. Sorry?
Message in a bottle.
Please tell me that was season 2 and my random guess was actually correct.
I think so.
I wouldn't want to disappoint you, Alan.
Right. Thanks for making me paranoid.
It's season 2, episode 7.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Probably a bit too cartoony a visual when the Malk goes through the Stargate. And whatever gantry or setup they've got on this planet, it looks interesting. Mm-hmm. Especially when the Malk's trundling through it and then starts flying. They don't fly, do they? Well, yeah, maybe float, but then it starts flying away.
Mm-hmm. Don't usually fly.
It probably comes pretty close to my, you know, least favourite episode of the season, but I think Light still gets it. But the Light was a better produced episode. Mm-hmm. Entity looked a bit cheap.
Yep.
Even right down to the little...
Because the effects on Prodigy, Double Jeopardy and Exodus Part 1.
Yeah.
Crap, we've no budget left.
Even the security cameras looked like they were, you know, secondhand from a car boot. Not as if they were brand new from Radio Shack, you know, they were little knobbly things that jerked and moved.
True, don't need them life.
Yeah, speak for yourself, Alan. No, the actual, you know, jerky movement of the cameras actually gave it a bit of character, though. It looked like, you know, there was an intelligence behind there that wasn't, you know, moving on well-oiled hinges or cogs.
I'm back.
He's back. He went offline briefly.
Did he? Well, I wonder how that will handle the record. Oh, sorry, it doesn't matter. If you're missing from the last 10 minutes, Daniel, that's why.
Nice.
We should take that as a hint to sort of fly through the last 3 episodes.
Double Jeopardy.
Yeah, Double Jeopardy. Go on then.
The return of the robots from Tin Man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have issues with the title Tin Man because it reminds me of a TNG episode that I'd rather pull my own lungs out through my arse than watch again.
Well, it reminds me of The Wizard of Oz, which I have the same feelings about.
Which is more appropriate considering all the Oz references in the series.
But Tin Man made a horrible impression on my memory and I can't forget it.
I didn't mind TNG Tin Man.
I like how Daniel gets conveniently killed within the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, really?
It was a good effect and all. The head falling off. And then just
technically, couldn't they have reattached the head?
I would have probably imagined the energy being, you know, ripping through the circuits had burned so much stuff out. You could reattach it, but it wouldn't work. And I'm sure the Cronus's dominatrix, assistant, probably tried that.
For a ghoul who's potentially lived hundreds of if not thousands of years, seemed a bit stupid.
Yes.
Pronunciation, I get. I mean, you look at that, and the first thing I thought as soon as happened was, that's a countdown. I don't speak the language. I've never seen this technology before, but I know a countdown when I see one. He stands there and looks at it and realizes it's a countdown about 5 seconds too late.
Well, I'm going to trust the prisoner that I have in my grasp.
Well, there you have the gored arrogance again, don't you? Mm-hmm. You are in my power. Anything you tell me is the truth.
I'm going completely on memory here because I haven't watched it probably in a year or two. Jack tapping his chest, getting an incoming message.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Needs radios.
It is. I mean, even if it's not actually effective, it's so something that Jack would do.
Yeah, when Jack has his fight with Jack.
Yeah. Yes. So as much as I'd love to see how this plays out.
Sam's in the background. Ooh.
Yeah.
Sam's in the background. Huh? Yeah, what Sam's thinking in the background? Ooh, threesome.
Yep.
You're going to cut that out, aren't you, Mike?
No, unfortunately, too, we're thinking the same thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right. Jack's death scene. Jack gets to do a death scene.
A good death scene.
ODA gets to do a death scene. And yay.
Very Blade Runner-ish, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Comparing Richard Dean Anderson in, admittedly, only science fiction TV show with Rutger Hauer in what's possibly considered one of the greatest science fiction films of all time. I don't know if Blade Runner is, yes, but...
The intent behind it, at the moment of his death, he actually thought he'd achieved what he was looking for. Maybe not to be human, but, you know, to be part of humanity. Yeah, he saved Decker. He's done something he would never do before, and that's kind of redeemed the character. Here, fake Jack was running around, you know, the galaxy trying to prove to himself he was no different to the real Jack. Mm-hmm. And sacrificing himself for others for the mission, that was what he was looking for. That kind of proved his point.
I think he wanted acceptance from his other half.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I did good. Yes, you did good. Then I can die. Which, yeah, which I say the line is almost a lift from the Rocker Hero one.
Let's not forget, Cronus got his comeuppance.
Yep.
Oh, yes. At the hands of other Teok rather than fake Teok.
Well, I like how Teok was like, for our father. I thought that was good.
Yeah, yeah.
Feelings, same personality, same memories, so...
Experience is what make you who you are.
Yeah. Without all biographical memory, we're all living memento.
What, is that the mint?
Yes. Yes, we are living Mentos.
Yeah, I'll drop you in some Diet Coke.
Let's go out with a bang.
Yeah, well, certainly I'd like to go out with a bang. I don't need to make that explicit, at least any more explicit than it is.
Come on then, last episode of the season, Exodus, or as Alan put it, Exodos.
It was a typo on a tweet.
You haven't heard that episode yet, Daniel, but you will.
Exodus, yeah.
I realise from now on throughout the rest of the Gatecast, it will be known as Exodus.
Yes.
Exodus.
It's like Sean Cream, we're just stuck with it.
Yeah.
Now, the question I have about this is, really, do you think a Hattar can be piloted by four people?
Yes.
Maintained?
Maintained? No. Fully functional ship, yes, because I imagine it's just as automated as they expect a ship to be. When things start going wrong... You know, when they come under attack, that's when you realise you need a crew.
So basically, this is a Star Trek Next Generation style ship rather than a Firefly style ship, where stuff breaks because stuff just racking breaks.
It's a mixture in between the two.
You've seen when they came under attack, a fully crewed attack would probably start returning fire within seconds. Teal'c had to take position, wait for the console to come up, a console we'd never seen before.
I love that console.
Extraordinarily jerky fashion.
It looked totally out of place with everything else. I mean, the blue neon lights on it and everything. You know, where's all the gold and the hieroglyphs? It looks like it's a market edition.
I didn't actually say it at the time. What I should have said at the time is, oh my God, they've gone disco.
Yeah.
Ricky.
Yeah,
we should have thrown in the feckin' tweaky noise. Actually, you haven't edited it yet. You still can.
Oh, thank you.
You've been outed, Mike.
Yeah.
And then we see the Apophis coming in and the dun dun dun.
And, well, never mind Apophis. Never mind anything. Never mind anything except the Tanith-Teok interaction, which just makes this episode a complete win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that Tanith escapes. Go, no, he can't escape. He has escaped. The Tok'ra, useless bunch of aliens they are.
Teal'c getting shot and blowing up the sun. This is a pretty big episode.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
What do you want to do with the... Yeah, it's a classic character line. What do you want to do? It's like, I want to blow up a sun with it.
Okay.
Yeah, why not?
Don't start small, Sam.
Yeah, we've got plenty of Stargates. We can spare one. Not a problem.
Or so we think.
As the season finales go, this was cracker.
And
it really was. Yeah.
It looked
expensive. We had a nice star blowing up. We had Teal'c getting shot. Jack escaping with his life. Jumping into hyperspace. And then finding themselves in the middle of nowhere. Our computer can't identify any star patterns.
At least, we're not 100 the first light 8 years seconds.
Yes.
And then, against all statistical probability, a Apophis' ship pops up.
Yes, a few hundred yards away.
We think Teal'c's gone too.
Although, given the relative sizes of both ships, it's probably about 2 miles away.
It probably is, yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, we saw Teal'c get taken by Tanith in the rings. And obviously, we assume he's on one of the surviving ships.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait until season 5, episode 1, to find out if he does survive. Unless, of course, you've read the blurb on the DVD cover.
Yes, you already know.
Yeah, no surprise there, then.
Indeed not.
Come try ya!
Daniel's actually all broken up about the end of the recording. He's upset and he's crying.
Oh, please. I'm late to my appointment.
See you in 6 months, Daniel. Can probably drop in for maybe possibly one or two episodes of season 5.
I'm going to be starting my own podcast if I ever get done recording. That was not a bug at all.
No, well, I don't know. There's so many other shows I could do. There's no point in doing a Farscape one. It's the Farpoint Media Evil Empire already has one.
Trust me, you wouldn't listen to my podcast anyway.
I've listened to a podcast on the L word for the sake of my gay friend. So,
wow.
I have lesbian friends, and it's actually not that titillating when you're sitting there watching football with them.
I imagine not.
Yeah, probably not. Well,
right, come on, let's wrap this up then.
Okay, yes, because I'm an outsider again and I need to get more.
Season 4, overall, an absolutely fantastic season of Stargate SG-1.
Only two slightly duff episodes.
Yeah, I think the move to 35mm showed right the way through. The production quality was outstanding. Favourite episode, Window of Opportunity. Worst episode for me, The Light.
Mm. I didn't really have a worst episode. There wasn't an episode, unlike season 3, there wasn't an episode I actually hated. I found something to like in all of them.
For me, it was The Curse, most liked and most hated was Entity.
Lovely.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for any feedback and our first live tweet. Yay. Technically two of them. Although I'm not sure if episode participants count, because otherwise, technically, I could tweet during the episode. Thank you, Daniel, for joining us and making you late for your appointment. And thank you, both of you, for giving me something to do while my housemate watched the Europa final. Otherwise, I would have to look at soccer for 2 hours.
Poor you.
Hi, folks, and thanks for listening, downloading, etc., etc., etc. If you need to email us, the email address is gatecastpodcast@gmail.com. If you need to find the podcast, somebody gave it to you, you got it through an online subscription, we're on iTunes as Gatecast. We're also listed on Podcast Alley and Podcast Pickle. If you want to leave feedback, you can record an MP3 and email it to gatecastpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us feedback on the website, that's gatecast.phasecast.com. There is the Facebook group, which is The Gatecast. And finally, you can also tweet us. We're The Gatecast on Twitter as well.
Okay then, I've been Mike. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, folks. We will see you in a week or so. Be well.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.
You've been listening to Gatecast, presented by Alan, Mike, and Scott. Visitors at gatecast.facecast.com.